Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
But we will now move on, gents, to the second song we're going to discuss, which is All Time High. Of course, the song for the 13th Bond film, Octopussy. And again, marked the return of John Barry. And I think we mentioned it in the review we did. Because they were going up against Never Say Never Again, and they had Sean Connery, they had to make sure they had every possible Bond, big Bond element in it. So they had to get John Barry back. And Chris was saying, you know, John Barry himself, you've got to start with that big note. And here we get.
I mean, it's so sexy 80s.
Oh, right, okay. Is it more like dad sexy, though? I'm not sure it's sort of... I love it, don't worry. I'm gonna defend it now. But yeah, he wasn't on For Your Eyes Only because of, again, tax reasons. I'll just say that this time. He wanted to work with Don Black, apparently. But he was committed to his musical Merlin. I don't have time to write one Bond song. Like how long do you need to write a lyric anyway? But he had to seek another lyricist, and he of course found Tim Rice. I don't think he's worked with him before, and of course he was doing a lot of musicals with Andrew Lloyd Webber amongst other things, and would go on of course to do the amazing lyrics for The Lion King as well, which he'd get an Oscar for. And yeah, Tim Rice was like, yeah, of course I'll do that. Phil Ramone was the producer of the song. So you've got some pretty cool, in inverted commas, names, big names on here for this song. But it's probably the least cool Bond song, isn't it? If we're being honest, it's not one that is down with the kids. It's
but
an adult contemporary.
Am I right in saying that either Chris or David have chosen this song?
Yeah, Dave chose this song, yeah. From the limited selection left, I must... There's not really left in the box.
It's you.
I feel like I should explain myself here. I believe the modern term for this is subverting expectations, isn't it? That's what I'm doing here. I'm subverting expectations, which is what every good movie producer does now when they release something that people don't like. Okay, they're clearly subverting expectations. hold on tight. Let the fight begin. Because we're doing Octopussy, okay? Because I think Octopussy as a film is enjoying a renaissance, is it not? I mean, I feel like it's really coming up on people's top tens and you know, top Bond films. And I remember when I was a younger man, Bond, you know, reading my Bond fan club magazines and fanzines and so on. You know, for our younger listeners, that's like Reddit that gets delivered through your door, okay? But I remember everyone just loved The Spy Who Loved Me, you know, everyone loved For Your Eyes Only and Live and Let Die. And Octopussy didn't really get any love from anyone. So I thought, well, as the movie's getting so much love, let's try and give All Time High, let's try and give Rita Coolidge a little bit of love. as well. Mm. Right, so that's why I've chosen All Time High. And you mentioned Tim Rice, actually. Tim Rice wrote 6 different song titles for John Barry, and they chose All Time High. And unfortunately, you can't find the bit of paper that he wrote them on, so we don't know what the other 5 titles were called, because I want to know what they were. if All Time High was that does make you think.
It does fit in with, because I know he'd seen a bit of the script, hadn't he, Tim Rice? And of course, and no one seems to remember, it is, you know, we're two of a kind is a key line.
They're used in the advertising.
So I love that linking the lyrics.
They're used in the advertising as well.
Okay? Yeah, as well, yeah. And Bond is on an all-time high.
Yeah.
But still odd that they chose this sort of genre of easy listening adult contemporary.
Gentlemen, we're all getting to a certain age now where we want a bit of easy listening. Okay, and again, let's give Rita props. Okay.
Women have a
This was the first day. Bond music video for the MTV generation. Okay, you know, no expense spared. They got Rita in Brighton Pavilion, didn't they? With a wind machine, stood there, their hands in their pockets for a few hours, and that's basically the video, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not India. But growing up, what as kids, did you like the song? Did you like it, Chris, when you were watching the film?
I never really paid them that much attention, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
It was the opportunity to see a scantily clad female form. It was a bit racy. Certainly, as I said earlier, like I remember having Moonraker on VHS and kind of thinking, this song's a bit dull. Fast forwarding it to get to the action. In my youth, I'm older now. And I think it was kind of the same with this song, that it was just one of those, let's wind it up, let's get to the action. But thinking about it now, it's a good solid effort. I certainly wouldn't say that it's like massively up there. But if you start thinking about the lines of it, it works both as a love song for Bond and Magda, Bond and Octopus. So when they say sweet distraction for an hour or two, yes, that's Bond and Magda in the hotel room. She's going to steal the egg. But then we're two of a kind is Bond and Octopus.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So there is a duality there for the song. For his
and I think something we've said as well, and I'm sure some people would agree, and I'd be interested to get your guys' thoughts. You know, each of the Bond actors possibly has, well, at least one Bond girl who you think that was their Bond girl. And I really, you know, Octopussy is Roger's Bond girl. Like they had great chemistry. And I don't know, it was quite a nice story, their story. They just went, you know, really well together.
Well, certainly from the anniversary show that you did, Rob Parker's imagined Bond and Pam sailing off into the
sea
together. And that works for Dalton's Bond. You know, they are together. And of all of Roger's many ladies, it's, you know, Octopussy she is his equal in both, you know, ability, intelligence, action, age. It's, you know, and you can see them sailing off into the sunset together. Which they kind of do on that boat with all the women rowers. You
know. James.
Yeah, James. it's great. They are two of a kind.
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it does suit them, doesn't it?
Yeah. But how much of the song itself, because obviously the other songs in the franchise, they repeat within the film score.
I think, in fact, it works better as... it works better within a love theme within the score. So for the scenes with the two of them, I think maybe and also with Magda as well, you might be right. Yeah.
Yeah, for the That's My Little Octopus.
Yeah. Right. Brilliant, yeah. David.
Beautiful. Yeah, David's holding it up.
If we're going to do that, I hate to my vinyl.
Beautiful. It works really well as a love theme, perhaps not quite as...
It's that thing. It works as a love theme. Does it work in the action?
It's a fair...
moments.
Yeah, it's only used as a love theme, isn't it? It's not like Living Daylights can be used as both, can't it? But that, to be fair, he's got three different songs within the
soundtrack. And also, so A View to a Kill just won the film on from this. That that can be used as a action example.
That's the best. Well done.
But there was clearly, you know, I like us celebrating this song and everything, but it was clearly a bit of a, after this, you know, that's one of Duran Duran went up to Broccoli and said, when are you going to get someone decent to do your non theme or but I don't know anything about Rita Coolidge other than she's a distant relation. Is it not?
I'm not even sure that's true, Martha.
Well,
that's
you know what Rita Coolidge
I'm not sure. Said,
you tell us.
Yes,
you know
this story. Gone, tell us, David. Yeah.
Well, it was because a certain young Barbara Broccoli
again, please
was listening to Rita Coolidge
in
the Broccoli household.
Yeah.
And Cubby walked by
and
said, I can't really do a Cubby accent, but who's that voice? You know, that's the voice we need for the next Bond movie. And because they were talking to
very good.
Oh, I can't remember the name of who they were talking to at the time. There was a front runner for All Time High. I don't know if you've done it in your notes and looked at it in your notes, but Laura Branigan was the front runner, and then she dropped out and they went with Rita. Yeah. But I have to say, gents, okay, while I have the mic, All Time High was number one, okay, in the US Billboard Adult Contemporary chart for 4 weeks. Okay. So, you know.
Well.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Ooh, that that might have been an all time high at that.
Well.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah, actually, go think of being number one.
We bow down before its superior.
No. Can you. who is this other girl who's going to be singing it? I don't think.
Laura Branigan. She's done a lot. If you look at the back catalogue, you'll know some of the songs like Self Control. You'll probably know Gloria. Math Gloria was used on the Gianni Versace heavily in that, you know, American crime story. She's done some cracking songs. Yeah, a lot of Diane Warren involvement. But she died quite young. I think she died in her late 30s or something. So, yeah, she was pretty big in America especially. But this song was much bigger in America, clearly. Apparently it was the only one. So it's the lowest charting song ever as a Bond song because it was number 75.
Outrageous.
But that's Man with the Golden Gun and Moonraker didn't even chart. So that's why it's the lowest. It's still not the worst. Because those two didn't even get into the charts. But what? I don't know what's wrong with people. I really don't. We've defended those songs already, so we'll damn well defend this one. Like you say, Dave, as well, it was pretty popular in other countries. It was in top 20 in South Africa, Austria, Finland, and Germany. And then it was top 10 in Netherlands, Sweden, and Switzerland. So not bad, you know. But just not very well known here, really.
We've got to talk about this, haven't we? I think we need to talk about Shaken and Stirred.
Well,
yeah. The breathy, whispery version.
Hi.
Yeah. It reminds me
what do you think, Dave?
Of William Shatner approach to singing from the 1960s. you just sit on a chair and...
It's not really singing.
On a... Hi.
The thing with the Shaken and Stirred version of it is that it's Jarvis Cocker, isn't it?
Yeah, Or Pulp.
Jarvis Cocker singing the song, and you get the lyrics, and then it goes into this magnificent end instrumental, and it's like the second half of the song where there's no singing is better than the first half. And you just go on this roller coaster of music and high again, and it just
hides behind the orchestra, doesn't it?
And then suddenly you get a baby crying at the end of it as well, and it's terrific.
It's an acquired taste.
It feels like
what was the phrase you were saying, David?
It feels like something should be on the Val Dunican show in the early 1980s or whatever, you know, just where someone just comes on and does
an
unplugged version of something, and it's normally terrible.
Yeah,
but it's okay. I don't mind it. I love the Shaken and Stirred album. So
a bit. What do you reckon, John Barry's face? yeah.
Oh,
this showcases obviously David Arnold probably more than Jarvis Cocker, doesn't it? I don't know. I suppose he makes it more of his own than so weird. When we did the review, certainly Chris is a big fan of it, but Rob was, what is this? This is awful. He can't understand it.
Yeah, I'm putting now on kind of better sound systems, so I can appreciate the composition, the arrangement. Actually, it's as Chris was saying, you know, the musical arrangement and the power of what David Arnold's brought to the track, I think is brilliant. I'm not so sure about Dear Old Jarvis, but it's different.
Yeah.
But I think the music's what makes that track. Yeah, definitely.
Did you know that it was put forward for your consideration
at the original
award? The original, yeah. I don't know whether you've heard about that when, you know, Bond producers put forward various things for consideration and then don't get the nominations to do one. There you go, there's the joke.
Well, I guess, are they coming off of the back of Nobody Does It Better?
No, well, Fiori's only got an Oscar.
It's just Barry who gets snubbed as Bond.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that's
for his Bond work.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a proper composer. Here's Bill. this is a funny cover, and again, can't believe she did a version. That you wouldn't think this is the same song to start with. Sounds so 80s, and but this was done in 92.
All I wanted was a sweet distraction for an hour or two.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Had no intention.
Is Matt Lucas?
So nice. Yeah,
it is. Isn't it range, darling?
How could they get another Shirley Bassey, John Barry? I can't think he produced this.
He's singing, isn't it? It's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Not sure of the arrangement, but.
No.
Always nice to hear.
Lovely sort of Yamaha keyboard.
You know, Shirley.
It's like James, our brother.
No.
Can't picture this in a film, though. I don't think.
She's enunciating very well, though. She's hitting her T's very.
You're just proving how good DJ is now, Tom. That's what you're doing.
It's a crowd pleaser again.
Well, yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe. I wouldn't disagree with you, Dave. What do you think of that version?
It was okay. I think I'd rather listen to Pulp, actually. At least it's something different.
Would you? Okay, fair enough. Right, Math, this one's for you now. We've never done a version like this on our podcast before. It's not a metal version. It's not a sort of 60s beatbox version.
Is that a dance version? Oh!
This is Kelly Lorena.
Who's
the
from?
Lead singer of Entrance.
Bury or that? Yeah.
She's from Bury.
Oh.
Yeah. It should kick in fairly soon. It does get to the verse.
Alright.
It's very that era. I think it must be like mid-2000s or something.
Baffling. See? Yeah.
I'm a fan.
That's okay.
It's not quite an Ibiza club.
It's Sol Viva. Our old nightclub.
Yeah. It's been demolished, sadly. It is. Hands in the air, anthem.
Yeah.
Oh!
The cheesy pop run that melody, Blue Orchid Nightclub, would play this for one stop.
Yeah. Throw some shapes.
That's James Dave, yeah. Slightly different. Some slightly different.
Yeah.
Oh, DJ, yeah.
Brilliant.
There you awesome. Go, chaps.
Yeah.
Right. This is the main draw. I'm sure all the listeners have been looking forward to this. They've been saying, look, you've done 8 episodes now on the songs. When are you going to do When Nobody Loves You? from the Quantum of Solace video game. Now, it's not one of the most popular Bond films. I don't know whether the video game is even more of an enigma. I don't know much about it, and I've no idea why we didn't have it, because it, just looking back at some of the footage, it looks incredible. It looks quite faithful to the film, and I don't know. I mean, as far as the actual film, they basically based it on not just Quantum, but Casino Royale. I think it's
the
one
game.
Of where, yeah, the game, yeah. So a bit like Chris was saying before with some of the Fleming novels, it goes back to the Fleming. He has a flashback of the events of Casino Royale within, you know, fairly close to the start of the game.
Was there a Casino Royale game?
No. And I think that's why. I think that's why they did.
So they're drawing on.
Yeah. Because I suppose when, for some reason, they went away, didn't they? So Dying of the Day, there wasn't a game, but they had these incredible, they had Nightfire, and of course they had Everything or Nothing, which were massive games at the time, almost in like secondary films.
Yeah.
Which Quantum is.
Everyone keeps saying, oh, Brosnan should have had his fifth film. He kind of did with,
yeah, he did.
with the games, because he was in them completely. In
the yes, he was, yes.
So,
what's interesting,
and they keep saying,
it's interesting you just say that, Chris.
If you look at some of the profits from game releases,
yeah, they're massive.
Yeah, you know, they make more money than the movies, some of them. So, you know,
they do, yeah. Or GoldenEye, yeah.
Yeah, that was his fifth Bond film.
Yeah, I think you gents were talking about Bloodstone, weren't you, on a previous podcast? Is that right?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Yeah, we were,
and, because I was thinking, you know, if you look at Casino Royale as Craig's first film and then Quantum as his second, I'm not a big fan of Skyfall, never have been. And then obviously we got Spectre and No Time to Die, but you could almost see Bloodstone as Craig's third film and actually him on a proper mission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
not a personal, well, slightly personal.
Which one?
Is that it?
Never Let It Be Said.
Which game is that?
That I don't do my research.
007 Legends or... Oh!
It's the Quantum Solace.
Oh, my word!
So,
what is it like?
So this is the collector's edition of the Quantum of Solace video game on Xbox 360. Sorry for those of you listening around the world, but
that's a gorgeous box.
This is the steelbook, and it comes
unboxing
with an additional bonus which I was watching yesterday evening as a part of my research, hoping that there was going to be some breadcrumbs in there about this song, When Nobody Loves You, but there is absolutely nothing on the bonus disc whatsoever, so I was bitterly disappointed. but I was able to watch the credits where the song plays. And the problem with kind of listening to it within the game is that it's got kind of audio played over it of the car chase sequence or their interpretation of the car chase sequence from Quantum of Solace. So you can't really hear the song very well. So didn't really help my research very much, if I'm honest.
There is a version without it. There's a version without it, which I can start to play here. It's like the bomb starts with the bomb thing, lovely, with a slight trip-hop beat in the background. I'll be honest, I really like it.
It sounds like the Bjork song that they did. It's got that
sort of...
Yeah.
With David Arnold.
That's exactly what I wrote, Chris, in my notes, that it sounds like... Or some of the 90s breathless Bieber artist.
Bond theme, yeah?
Well, I think it leans a lot on the Bond theme, which, you know, I like, but the stuff that isn't the Bond theme is a little less memorable. But
yeah.
There's not many better ones since, I'm not sure.
It certainly feels like a Euro poppy version of the Bond theme or a
It's by somebody called Curly. K-E-R-L-I.
Yeah.
And she's a Finnish pop star, I think. No, Estonian. Estonian.
Yeah, we had the Finns before with the...
Yeah, we've, had the, we've done them, yeah. Now, amazing facts about her. She co-wrote the song Skyscraper, the one that was Demi Lovato, and then made famous by Sam Bailey from the X Factor.
Yeah.
This is my... I quite like this style of music. It's very that mid-90s Massive Attack mixed with a bit of...
Yeah.
With that electro... You say the mid-90s and with that sort of electro feel, I was thinking, is this the Bond theme that Eric Bearer would have given us?
Oh, whoa.
You know, because he didn't do GoldenEye, did he?
No.
Bono and the...
We got... The GoldenEye song was one of the best.
Mm. Oh, it's...
But if Eric Bearer would have done a Bond
theme... Yeah.
Theme song, would it have been
not something? The experience of love?
Push too hard.
I think it is the Bond theme element, though, that I enjoy the most in this track. I think that's the bit that really catches my attention.
Yeah.
And it's like almost like a dance version. You know, it's like it's almost like we're back to Moby again, aren't we? I think it shows how versatile the James Bond theme is.
Yeah.
You can put it in a dance version, it's still brilliant.
Yeah. So, Tom, do we know why the game didn't use another way?
Because it's rubbish.
Let's talk about the other Quantum song. And we've done it before with, I think, Steve Clamp was trying to defend it, actually, to an extent. And I think he won a few people round with it. It's the production that people have more of an issue with, I think, and the wailing at the end. But I think the opening riff and... There's a really good Bond song in there, surely.
It's,
and I think maybe it just needed one of them on their own, or maybe just Alicia Keys, maybe, I don't know.
And maybe with the composer, you know, with David Arnold involved as well, might have with the orchestration.
In.
I agree. I think the riff is
pretty good. David's not a fan, so I'll let you.
I mean, I agree that the kind of music's good, especially at the beginning in Another Way to Die, but. Mm. I think the only way I can describe it, how I feel about it, is it's almost like two people doing karaoke and shouting at each other. That's kind of how the track kind of comes across to me. And I can't, it's actually one of the few Bond tracks that I cannot stand. Like, literally, I will skip it if I have half a chance. Sorry if there's any fans out there.
When you watch the film, David, do you
probably go off and get
do you fast forward or
I have to be honest and then come back
put it on mute
and watch the rest? Yeah, I like Quantum. Yeah. I like Quantum. It skirts around my top 10. I like it as a movie. I just hate it. That's my bottom Bond theme. with Madonna, of course. Could imagine.
Hate's a very strong word, David.
Well, if you want opinion,
may I present an opposing opinion?
Please, Chris. Chris will have the opposite view that he'll hate the film but love the song.
Well, you're not far off. The song is so good. It is such.
Oh, brilliant. Whoa!
This is great.
Go for it, Chris. Brilliant.
I mean, that dirty. So we were saying earlier with. Yeah. Goldfinger, so it's bam, bam, and with Another Way to Die, it's that and it just
if someone else was singing the song itself
lyrically, I'm not gonna defend vocals or at least the singer. That's personal taste. That's fine, but even the lyrics. Another killer with a slip trigger finger for Her Majesty.
Yeah.
That is such a tantalizing lyric.
Yeah.
Another golden gun poisoning your fantasy. It's setting up all of the Bond tropes and it just builds even more. And it, as John Barry said, you know, it sets its stall out. This is going to be a fast banging film. And I watched Quantum again recently because there was a lot of love floating around for it on Twitter. Give it a go. And it plays a lot better than I remember it. The first 40 minutes are so chock full of story and pace and action. It does sort of fall off a cliff after the opera, but there's so much in that first sort of 40 minutes. It it whizzes by, and it's almost too much, almost too much. But the song is brilliant. I think it's really, really solid, and I think it deserves a lot more love and attention than it
gets.
Not getting
any love from me.
It's the last upbeat one as well, isn't it?
Well,
it's a no from me.
Yeah, I'm sort of probably somewhere between the two of you, because I think that, yeah, the singing, yeah, the vocal, it isn't great, and it's jarring, and it's a bit embarrassing at times in some ways.
It's an important part of the song, isn't it?
Yeah. Even though, you know, they should, Alicia Keys is, you know, a really good singer and everything, and she could probably do a good Bond song in her own right. And, and you know, Jack White, who's obviously more responsible for this. Yeah, I think, you know, John Kell pointed out that he's very much about limited production, you know, because there's only him and his ex-wife, is it? Not sister, is that right?
I think they revealed that they were meant to be sisters, but they revealed that they weren't, and they were an item. Or is it?
I'm sure my flatmate told me. Anyway,
yeah.
But I do think so. In terms of I'll come on a bit more about the film as well.
Victoria.
But there's no doubt that the start of the film is pretty, you know, all action, absolutely straight in there. Well, a lot of the film is like that, but that, you know. Does he opens the boot and then says time to get out or something like that, and he goes I think that's pretty good. That's a lot of what I want, and I know that Daniel Kleiman inexplicably, well, I think it was Mark Forster who didn't want him back. Mm. Well, or had his own people.
In his own.
I do quite like the opening credits, to be honest, and I like some of how the music is just when the more the song goes on, the more the vocals become annoying and not what you want. I'm sure that there's a bit of a version of the theme song used in that boat chase.
Oh my word.
I'm sure within the score you can hear some of it.
Well, nobody loves it.
No. I forgot that we were talking about that. But no. Quantum of Solace is one, truth be told, I struggle to watch the most just because of I do find it quite hard to watch. There are more and more things I like about it, but I still do struggle. And I feel like I wish that, I really wish Martin Campbell would have come back, but even like halfway through when they were struggling with the writer's strike and everything, if you could have said, Martin, come in, and, you know, a bit like, you know, I don't know, other films where a director's had to take over halfway through or something
Ron
like
Howard.
That. Yeah, yeah, on, exactly like that. Yeah, Solo.
Yeah.
I don't know. Martin Campbell would have been able to make more of what had been done, and I don't know. Those are my general thoughts.
If you don't like Another Way to Die, and we skirted across that, there is the other option, bringing it full circle back to Shirley Bassey, No Good About Goodbye.
Yeah.
Which isn't her attempt at a theme for this film, even though David Arnold worked on No Good About Goodbye with her. You play it over the opening credits, and it fits beautifully.
I'm sure as Tom Mason or Sam Rogers done a, maybe not. They've not got up to it yet. Maybe I don't know.
I haven't seen it on their.
Yeah. That's a perfect thing for them. But you're right. Was it so? David Arnold brought this, and they were like, "Nah, sorry."
It's that weird thing of it in the rumor mill. Shirley brought out this song at the time.
Yeah.
Produced by David Arnold. And it sounds like a Bond theme. Mm. And the lyrics fit to the narrative of the end of Casino Royale, you know, moving on, No Good About Goodbye. I can't remember the lyrics now. But it's that thing of it fits. It's worth hunting out and having a listen to and imagining if that was Quantum's theme tune.
Maybe they didn't want to embarrass her, you know, like such a Bond legend to have had a song rejected. Well, some of the fans might have been in uproar, wouldn't they, if they found out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It would now. I think maybe at the time, that time, it was all for changing it up. We weren't sort of, let's look back to the 60s. It was like, no, this is new Bond, and we want to make our own way. So I can understand why. And obviously, you know, Alicia Keys particularly, it's a big name, isn't it? But it was Jack White who was given the gig, and then he got Alicia Keys. So these things, it's weird. I don't know how they happen, but glad they did.
Although I don't know if it's quite telling that we've spoken more about Another Way.
Well,
Nobody Loves You.
Bring it back to this song, When Nobody Loves You. Yeah. So it was written by this singer Curly, and a guy called Richard Fortus, who I think is like a music producer, but he's been a member of Guns N' Roses since 2002. So even though that's 20 years, that's like sort of after they'd done all the massive albums. But these touring musicians, he actually did, this is a good fact about him, this guy, Richard Fortus. He did a cover of the Bond theme for the game Guitar Hero World Tour.
Oh.
And there's obviously a lot of Bond theme in this, isn't there, which we've just said. So that sort of fits.
Mm.
Do you like it when Bond songs use a lot of the Bond theme, or are you more, we need to hear a bit more originality in our Bond songs going forward? Because the last few have sounded quite similar in style, haven't they? The slow, sparse production, breathy lyrics. I suppose the Sam Smith one had a bit more orchestra, but there's barely any orchestra for Billie Eilish's.
I'd like a bombastic theme tune again. I think we deserve something big and something that's going to, get your hairs tingling. I think Skyfall is a wonderful song. It does well with the title. You know, what is Skyfall? Why, how can you sing about that? What does it mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, Adele did well with that. Sam Smith, I think, is just forgettable, and the least said about him and the track, the better. we seem to be getting into a new style of Bond track, and it, you know, for the past few years, and it is that sort of melodic, simple. I just want something. I don't know. I want Live and Let Die.
You want Man with the Golden Gun.
I want Man with the Golden Gun.
I think this is the way that they'll have to go next. So I think for the new film in general, there'll need to be a more sort of positive, upbeat kind of feel to the whole thing. You know, I think it was on the quiz for James Bond Radio. They were talking about, they think it needs, you know, with a new actor, it needs to be, they need to look at like the Living Daylights and GoldenEye as almost templates for new film. And I couldn't agree with that more. And I think something that they did brilliantly for Casino Royale was the song, because, you know, it is quite an emotional film, but I think it was a great idea to have a really upbeat song for that. And I'd love just something like that again.
And I think with the film as well, there are a number of sort of comments on social media of like, oh, how are they going to reboot it? How is it going to restart? And I don't think it needs that. We are so culturally familiar with Bond. And certainly in Dr. No, that wasn't an origin story. That was, here's your mission.
Yeah.
Go and do it.
Yeah.
I kind of want that from the next Bond film. I just want them to open the door to M's office. Bond walks in, gets his mission, and that's it. We don't need reset. We don't need to go back. Here's how you got your 00 ranking. It's just, you know, get on with it.
Would you want the same actors, though, for any of the, you know, M, Moneypenny, Q, Bill Tanner?
Oh, Bill.
David's shaking his head. Well,
I would like a little bit of continuity. Just because it's happened before, it can happen again. I don't mind. I'm not that precious about that. I love the current Moneypenny that we've got. I'd like her to be a bit more sassy. I love the idea that they had in the comic books that Moneypenny is actually M's bodyguard as well as his secretary. You know, she's the last line of defense.
Yeah, yeah. That's true, yeah.
You know, a little bit more of that would be interesting.
And that would work with the current character. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed.
She's had a relationship with Bond, though, so I don't know how it... They reset Dalliance. M.
Dalliance.
Yeah. They've done resets before and kept other members of the... I think it could do it again. I think it would help for support's sake, for continuity, but if it needs to change, as long as it gets right, I'm down with it.
Before David comes in, I just wonder whether modern audiences, whether they think they could, you know, people might not be able to understand that. And also when you've had those characters like, you know, No Time to Die, like that, such a letdown of a scene in M's office, just sort of drinking to him rather than a funeral or anything like that. But all those characters recognizing that he died, you know, it'd be quite weird for them to then come back. But, you know, who knows? I'd love all that cast to be still involved, because I like the continuity and I now like all of them.
I think I really do like Ben Whishaw as Q, and I like all the kind of Scooby Gang as they've been. But I think the only one I really wanted to recur was Ralph Fiennes. I thought he was a great M, and I thought he was going to become an amazing M. But I can get over the fact that he is indirectly responsible for the death of James Bond. You know, he had an amazing speech, Inspector, about, well, we can't, you know, I mean, we have to have boots on the ground and someone put her holding the trigger and this sort of thing. And then went and had a hand in developing a nanobot virus that kills millions of people remotely. So I can't help but feel that he's not really at the hand that you want at the tiller, to be fair. So I think I'm ready for a new...
I think there'll be an inquiry, maybe. You're absolutely right. He was he's like a hero, wasn't he, Inspector?
And you know, I think I really liked the way the character was developing. No Time to Die came along and kind of mucked all that up, really. I did not like the scenes between Bond and M. I don't like to see Bond, you know, being subordinate in that kind of fashion with M in his office. If I was M, I'd just had him thrown out, to be fair. Just get this guy out of here. You know, just come on. All this thing about the size of the desk and stuff. It just didn't play at all. And then literally in the next scene, they're sat next to the Thames chatting like their old friends. It didn't flow very well at all. Yeah. And then you later find that they shot that scene out of sync because of Daniel Craig's injury. It kind of makes more sense then, but it doesn't make sense within the movie. So I just felt like they could have had an amazing end there who could have continued. But I think the Daniel Craig universe now has to be a separate universe, you know, because of what's happened. So, you know, clearly now we're going to have to start with a clean slate.
But there is that scene in the film where they're in the hallway and you've got the portraits of all the previous M's, and it's like, okay,
I liked that, but I think that was just a bit more of a token kind of gesture, a bit of a nod rather than, oh, hang on, this was actually the same. I think it
makes it a bit difficult in this whole continuity timeline. Where are we? What's it? It's just muddying the waters almost a step too far. I think that the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe has a lot to answer for.
Agreed.
Or maybe not a lot to answer for, but certainly the producers reacting to the MCU thinking we need to create this universe. We've got one already. And peppering it with these ideas of portraits and references. It doesn't need it.
They're not as prolific, though, are they? As, you know, Marvel's got about 3 or 4 films out a year, and you know,
no one remembers what happened.
No one will remember. People have grown up. You know, if you were like, you could have been going from 10 to 16, or couldn't you?
How dare they use
10? In the 10 years.
Yeah.
How many films did you have?
Ugh.
7? Yeah. Was it
from 62 to 72, or you know, I don't know, 73?
And then in the last 7 years, we've had 3.
I think obviously one every year is unrealistic, but one every 2 or 3 years.
It worked all the way up. Even going back to Quantum, you know, 2 years after Casino Royale, and then Spectre, 3 years after Skyfall. You know, you'd take that these days, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely.
You get so excited thinking of the in-between films, don't you?
Yeah.
Famously, the 91, 93... Connery's, but then 2004 you've got Everything or Nothing, 2010 you've got Bloodstone, and then it doesn't really work with the Spectre No Time to Die because it was meant to come out earlier, wasn't it? It doesn't really.
Yeah, we're hamstrung by COVID, and no one can blame them for that.
No, you can't blame it for like 2 years of the delay, can you? So just one film in between, but.
Get the next one out soon.
Well, yeah.
Don't leave us hanging.
Really 007 is part of the Pod Dojo Network.
David, it's a very open question, but what would you do next? Where would you go?
Well, I think they need to do something kind of fairly quickly. A 60th anniversary is a good time to do it, I think. I did notice they've changed a lot of the kind of livery and logos now on some of their social media outlets, yeah, including YouTube, with the, you know, they've got the 60th anniversary logos and things up. I think, I know there's a lot of talk about maybe going back and doing a period piece. I don't want to see that. I want Bond to remain contemporary, relevant to modern audiences. I'm not sure. I mean, that would maybe work as like a Netflix series or something, or Amazon, I suppose, series. But I just want a James Bond film, as was said earlier, where he's given a mission, he goes off and fulfills the mission, and there's as many of the elements of Bond included as possible. And just, you know, go out and find the best actor for the role. You know, that's what made Bond great, is that Bond was always contemporary, and Bond's always a reflection of what's going on in the world,
yeah,
and the concerns of the world. And Michael G. Wilson always used to say that they go out and they look at what the concerns are, you know, whether that's an energy crisis in The Man with the Golden Gun or whatever, and that helps them to pen the script. You know, I think they've done that in, I mean, perhaps they did that a little bit too on the nose with a kind of pandemic in No Time to Die, but
they did.
But I think, you know, I just want them just to, like you were saying earlier, let's have a Living Daylights, let's have a Golden Eye, let's give the actor a really fantastic introduction and just set it up so that it can be rolled out, perhaps hopefully every 2 or 3 years, with a new mission, you know, new cast and new villains to defeat, and less continuity, because I don't think it really brings anything to the Bond films. You know, you can have, like we were talking about earlier, the portrait in Tracy's grave. You can have little Easter eggs for Bond fans in the films, which we will see and enjoy. But to think that, you know, audiences, you know, the lay person remembers what happened 6 years ago in Spectre and what happened in Casino Royale. What's that? Getting on for 20 years ago. It's like, oh, yes. Oh, I remember Spectre. Yes. You know, unless people are watching ITV2 every night, you know, the lay person's not going to remember all these story beats. So, like you were saying, unless
we are
guilty,
unless you're going to release 3 films a year like the MCU, people aren't really going to appreciate the continuity anyway. So you may as well just release standalone movies. Dare I say, Mission Impossible is becoming a bit of a template. They've shot 2 movies back to back, and that might be the way forward for the Bond franchise.
Yeah. I think if they did that, they would connect them, wouldn't they? If they shot them back to back, I think they wouldn't be able to resist. But it's like, well, it should have done that with Daniel Craig. If you knew he was going to wander and say, no, I don't want to come back, they should have said, right, can you shoot the other one now, please? Although he was probably too injured, wasn't he? So, what would you do, Chris?
I think I'd echo a lot of what David said. I think they've got to strike while the iron is hot. They're coming off the back of a big hit film, whether you liked it or hated it. It was a massive success. It pulled the audiences back in after the COVID crisis. Yeah, we're now at the 60th anniversary, and I think some big online event where, oh, you get a load of the old guard back together and reminisce, and then you announce, right, and here he is, here's the new Bond.
That is
the pinnacle of the 60th anniversary. And you say, okay, right. And then the next film's coming out late next year or the year after, but at least we've got, that's the news, that's the man. And then we can move forward. Who that person is, I don't think we know who it is. You'll get these lists of, oh, it could be Tom Hardy, or it could be whomever. And no, I don't. All of the names that are floated about are too A-list already. They're too high
profile. Yeah.
The Bond franchise has a history of taking from television or taking from unknowns and elevating them to A-list. And I think they should do that again. We don't know who the next Bond is. We've seen him on TV maybe in the background or in a supporting role, and this is going to make him. That's how I would play it. And then for the next film, yeah, it should just be I don't want to say like a Roger mission movie, because all his films were just man on a mission. There was no connection between any of them. Just, you know, turn up and get on with it. I don't mind if the pre-title sequence is connected to the film. I almost want it to be its own little thing.
Yeah.
That's the introduction. Then let's get on with the main act. There's a reason they worked. Don't ruin the template too much. Play with it. Don't break it.
I've just been revisiting the Indiana Jones films as well, and obviously they've taken a lot from Bond in terms of the structure. They've almost got, well, they have got pre-title sequences without the titles, haven't they?
Yeah.
Obviously the famous one in Raiders of Lost Ark, and then in Shanghai in Temple of Doom. They'll have the odd character, of course, in the third one that reappears, and there's references to the past, but anyone can go in blind and watch any of them out of order. It doesn't matter. That's what happened.
Yeah.
I understand why they did it, because Casino Royale was, you know, a new temple. I don't know whether they intended to do that after Casino Royale, apart from until it was a big success, and they thought, people like these, let's make some more of them. So I don't really know whether that was the intention. And then, of course, the Marvel thing came in where you're trying to create the gang and they're all sort of... Because I've heard some people, you know, why did they send just Q and, you know, Nomi to... And I, why didn't they just send the whole army? Like, what they did... It's just ridiculous in many ways. But, those are things I'm not as critical of, to be honest, in the No Time to Die, you know, because being cinematic 007, and making sense are two different things, aren't they?
007 needs to go off, obviously, in the dinghy. And leave the old man to deal with you know, the villain and the entire base by himself, because clearly Marilyn can't pilot a dinghy by herself.
Well, she couldn't be trusted with a gun either in the inspector, could she? I've not revisited it since I saw it. I saw it twice at the cinema, but I haven't revisited it yet. I'm sure I will do by the time this is out. What have you guys thought? Have you seen it on home video yet? As the phrase doesn't go.
So I saw it at the cinema on the sort of day of release with a couple of friends and just came out of it with my head spinning, and then didn't see it until Christmas when someone gave it as a gift on Blu-ray. And that's when I saw it with my husband again for the first time. And that was the first time he'd seen it. And having not spoken to him about it because I didn't want to spoil
good.
The surprise.
Is he a big Bond fan, or
he's not? He'll watch one if I want to watch one, or if it's on, we'll, you know, or if the gang of friends is together, oh, let's put on Diamonds Are Forever or Live and Let Die. We'll watch it. But he wanted to see it so that we could talk about it. And the feeling was the same, that it's like, what has happened? my feeling again was watching it again was the same. I cried when Felix died again. I cried in the cinema and then I cried again at home when that happened. But then at the end, I just felt empty. And it's just like, what are you doing? It's a mess. And bringing in the elements from Honor Majesty's, bringing in We Have All the Time in the World, we're supposed to be, you know, originally they were, right, this is a reset and this is something new, and Daniel Craig is his own timeline, and all the you know, all of those sort of arguments. Yeah. And then to suddenly bring in the most emotional and most evocative of the Bond songs,
the most one off,
exactly. And then use that to toy with our heartstrings and our emotions to try and crowbar in a bit of affection for this character. And she's just a plank of wood. And I just, I can't talk about it. I can't talk about it.
Oh, no.
It frustrates me. No end. There was so many opportunity to do something different. And they just had to pillage the archive to get action and to get something. I'm sorry.
No. Perfectly entitled to. And I'm sure... This is most if not all of us on here would agree with you. I was just thinking, do you think, you know, say for the 60th anniversary, it might be a bit, certainly for me, it might be a bit nicer seeing like Daniel Craig with the other Bond actors and now being part of the history, rather than we've had a bombardment of it all being about his era and being James Bond, the documentary and everything. It might be quite nice to see him with the other, you know, with George, with Tim, with Pierce.
Yeah.
Just so that we can move on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think there was, I seem to remember back in the sort of glory days of television coverage of film premieres, they had a TV special about the premiere of, maybe it was World Is Not Enough.
Dawn of the Day, I think.
They had George and Roger and
Tim, I think, as well.
And Tim all together there. And it was the royal premiere. So the Queen was there as well. And it's just this idea of all the Bonds with the Queen in a photo. And it like, oh, that would have been a fabulous sort of photo. Mm. But
I think they just don't want to distract from for this one. It was great that they had everyone there and they had, you know, was it William and Kate were there, weren't they, of course? And it was great to see everybody out in public, of course. We've been locked in our homes for so long. That was brilliant.
Yeah, it was a big event.
But I don't think they would have wanted, like, George, Tim and Pierce there because it would distract. This is meant to be like the Daniel Craig story, this ending.
Yeah.
Particularly this film is focused on him, his final bond. I'm not saying they would have come, but...
Yeah, so that's what I mean. I don't think they would do it for that, but then now, 60th anniversary, maybe, and like Chris says, you know, for announcing the new Bond, if they were all together, it would be nice. That would be nice.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing, you know, Daniel's part of that, and then the announcement, that would be pretty...
Good idea.
It almost sounds like you're turning into one of the sort of the Doctor Who announcement, who's the next Doctor.
Yeah,
into a TV special.
They transform, don't they?
Transforming. Dave, have you seen it at home since you saw it at the cinema?
Well, Tom, I am the control, I believe, because I have only seen this film once. I'm quite pleased, actually.
No? Oh, you can't say that.
I didn't kind of record my immediate feelings after walking out the cinema like you guys did, because you probably had to bleep a lot of it out and it wouldn't be fit for the wider audience. I was not happy when I saw the film, and I don't have a burning desire to watch it again soon. I will watch it again, clearly. I've got it on Blu-ray, but I think Chris really touched a nerve there when he talked about We Have All Time in the World. That song was played at my father's funeral. It was played on local radio for my wife's anniversary.
Oh, wow.
Myself and wife's anniversary. So that song is part of the tapestry of my life. And I don't want to be watching Majesties and thinking of Bloody Madeline and Matilde driving away in an Aston Martin at the end of No Time to Die. Okay? I do not... Even 1% of my brain to be thinking of anything else apart from Majesties when I'm watching Majesties. And that's the problem with retconning, as the Star Wars franchise has done also, is that it takes something away from what has gone before. You know, you're mining that wonderful wealth of talent that you were talking about earlier tonight, all of those wonderful people that contributed to Majesties and made that film what it was. You're mining that because you clearly can't come up with anything new yourself that is as good as or better. And I do wonder why they didn't get Billie Eilish to record maybe a second track or something, because if she'd done like a second track for the end and that was kept a secret or something, she's got billions of fans. I mean, that would have gone viral. That would have been ridiculous. Like, they could have sold so many, you know, of that track online and on vinyl and whatever, you know. It would have been a fantastic Easter egg, you know. But no, they had to use something that had gone before. And I think that's probably what made me quite angry when I left the cinema. It was that track and the choices that the producers had made within that film. So I'm looking forward to something different. I'm not a hater of Daniel Craig. I love Casino Royale. It's in my top five. Like I said, I love Quantum as well. I've not been massively happy with what came after that. I'm not a fan of Skyfall or Spectre or No Time to Die, clearly.
Could I briefly ask, so you're not a fan of Skyfall in particular, because that's a popular one, and it's probably the one, that and Casino Royale are definitely the ones I think are the best of Craig's era, and I find Skyfall the one that's the easiest to watch, personally. It was seen as a bit of a Goldfinger for his era, because it was like almost a one-off, you know, not connected to the others, which they then changed and everything, but
What was it that you kind of struggled with or didn't like?
Well, I struggle with the length of Skyfall. I think it goes on a bit too long. I think it probably should have been wrapped up in London. I find it a bit bloated as a movie. It's the kind of egotistical filmmaking that's taken over, I'm afraid, in the Eon franchise for the last few decades, where we mustn't have a gun barrel because that's going to spoil the first shot of the movie with James Bond moving from the darkness into the light. This sort of rubbish.
Yeah, that's
rubbish that you get, that immediately starts me off in a bad mood. I'm in a bad mood already. You know, the film's only just started. But I think the treatment of women, especially in that movie, I personally can't stand.
You know,
this is meant to be a modern, contemporary version. You've got Severine, who we know is, you know, basically a sex slave, however you want to refer to her. You know, she's being taken advantage of. Good old Daniel just nips into the shower with her, doesn't he? You know, it's, you know, and then she just gets shot in the face. You know, good one there. M just makes so many poor decisions throughout the film. I mean, it's clearly a good idea just to go to a remote place in Scotland with no backup, no weapons, and just wait for... You know, wait for the villain to turn up with an army of heavily armed mercenaries. Clearly, that's a good plan. And I just find that, you know, M, Bond just make terrible decisions throughout. Moneypenny, obviously, field operative, shoots Bond by mistake and then gets shoved behind a desk. That's clearly empowering women in the Bond films. If you want to have my longer thoughts on Skyfall, you know, I'm happy to. We'll chat about it.
Keep going.
No, I understand why people like Skyfall, but
Chris will be allowed to retort.
But for me, it's style over substance. I there's things that I like about it, as with every Bond movie. There are things that I like about it, but there's many things that I do not like about it. And I think Skyfall was riding the wave of Britishness, for want of a better term, that came after the Olympics. I think that it got a big pump, you know, shove from that, basically, and did very well in the box office. And I'm not sure that's a reflection on perhaps how good the movie is overall on many rewatches. Every time I watch it, I think this is the time I'm really going to like Skyfall. I sit there and I think, oh, I'm really enjoying this. This is really good. And then I find myself not enjoying it. Okay. And I think it is once you get to kind of Silver's Island and, you know, the treatment of Severine and Bond jumping on a lizard's head and all this sort of thing. You know, after that moment, I start to kind of wane a little bit. So, but hey, you know, we've all got our favorites.
Mm.
I know there's fans of Die Another Day out there. Diamonds Are Forever. You know, it's not for me. But if you love Skyfall, then more power to you. It's certainly well directed. The action is good and so on.
Right to reply.
Chris, are you a fan?
Of Skyfall? Yes. Yes, I am. I certainly think it's... I certainly think it's Craig's strongest film. I think it's possibly better than Casino Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he's more comfortable in the role. It's more of a, as you said earlier, it's his Goldfinger. It's him on a mission film. Yes, it has plot problems. Narratively, it goes off in one direction and then it goes off in another. You know, as soon as we go to Scotland, we end up in a Straw Dogs Home Alone mashup. But taken on its own, that section of the film, it does work. It's solid and you're entertained by it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love the favorite bit of the film. As a petrol head, it broke my heart when I saw it in the cinema, the Aston Martin getting shot to pieces. But the look that Daniel Craig gives when it blows up and he's like, right, I was going to kill you guys anyway. You've destroyed my car. Now I'm going to do it painfully. It's like there's menace in that face. And it was brilliant. That was his high watermark. But then even it manages to embrace the comedy very well, the pre-title sequence. And there's the crane on the train with Bond climbing over and saying on the radio,
right,
what's going on? Moneypenny's, it's a little difficult to explain. How do you explain what's going on? It is brilliant, you know. it covers off so many of the Bond points that you want and pushes things a little bit further in directions you didn't know you wanted.
Or didn't want.
Again, playing with the whole franchise one timeline. it goes to his lockup and he gets the Aston Martin, and it's the Aston Martin from Goldfinger, not the Aston Martin that he won in a game of poker
from. Yeah.
There are difficult moments like that, but I'm having fun watching it. I'm willing to cross over that.
That's fair.
I know we weren't talking about that, but I do find it interesting because, you know, I thought it's a film that was massively popular with the general public, and I thought it was, you know, massively popular with Bond fans. It's just there's a few Bond fans I've come across, you know, who've kind of said, yeah, I'm not actually a massive fan of Skyfall, and I was quite sort of surprised by it. And
if I explain my position,
it's still a very, very popular film amongst.
If I explain my position a little bit further, Math, just, you know, because Chris quite rightly said that, you know, it could be seen as Craig's Goldfinger, but imagine Sean Connery in Goldfinger being portrayed as being a bit old and past it, and then getting pissed off and leaving the service and going and living on a shacking up on a beach somewhere, you know, drinking whatever he's drinking and doing these weird things with scorpions in bars. Or maybe Rod's doing that in Spy Who Loved Me, you know, thinking, oh, I've had enough of this. I'm out of here. You know? And he can't shoot.
Oh, don't tease me.
You know,
oh,
this crap. You know, and then he's got to have all these tests to come back to the service. I mean, I think what angers me about Skyfall more than anything is the fact that if we're going to look at continuity, that kind of mucked up the Craig era, because after Quantum, we needed that Craig mission that we've been talking about. He deserved it. You know, he deserved a Bond movie where he was just given a mission by M. He went out into the field. He was on a Manchester Secret Service, and we get not a formulaic Bond film necessarily, but just seeing James Bond doing what he does, you know. And I think him kind of getting shot and, you know, leaving the service and this and that, and then, like we said, him coming back and being said, oh, you're old and you're past it in your third film, and, you know, you've got to go through all this retraining and this and that. It was a shame, really, because I think it just kind of derailed the Craig era a little bit. And then they tried to then course correct with Spectre, which didn't work very well. And then obviously we had No Time to Die at the end. So it kind of fills me with a bit of disappointment, really, that Craig didn't get just, you know, a standard mission, like with Goldfinger or with The Spy Who Loved Me or with The World Is Not Enough. You know, you think about the third movies of some of the other actors.
That's fair.
I think amongst the general public, the most popular Craig film will be Skyfall. I think Bond fans will always say Casino Royale, but I think certainly the average Bond casual viewer would say Skyfall. But, and that's weird because it is a film that is not that formulaic in many ways. So then you're like, well, good that they did that and everything. But the Bond songs, just to go back to them.
Oh, yeah.
No, they're fantastic. You introduced it, Dave, and we invite people on here, not with the intention, but, you know, it's like a secret club at the moment. Honest thoughts, you're not allowed to say them online necessarily. But no, we do try and be positive, and I think we need to we'll revisit No Time to Die again. You're never going to change the big plot points and the Honor Manchester's. I can't get over things like that. But there's plenty to enjoy in the film. And yeah, we've got a nice 60th anniversary and hopefully a new Bond to look forward to fairly soon. So yeah, let's go back to being positive now. Let's listen to All Time High. that'll get us cheered up.
Yeah, which version then, Tom?
Yeah, it's got to be the Kelly Lorena dance version, I think.
Well, I had no intention.
Or the Mark Wahlberg.
I had no intention to do the things we've done. It's been great fun, gents. Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant.
All I wanted was a sweet distraction for an hour two. Had no intention to do the thing.
Still better than Katy Perry.
Funny how it always goes with love. When you don't look, you find. But then we're two of a kind. We move as one. We're an all-time high.
You suck, get off the stage. Oh, come on, give him a chance.
Doing so much more.
You're an asshole.
Really the worst.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.